And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
Good evening and welcome to the debut episode of Boom Goes the Dynamite here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I am your host, Jeffrey Wessel. With me, my co-host, Chris Damasceno. Chris, how are you, brother?
Doing good. We gave Pro Wrestling Only a couple of days to talk us out of this, but nobody did, so here we are.
In fact, we actually got a blessing from Kelly from the WorldCast. So hey, shout out to Kelly there, Kelly Nelson.
Oh dear God, they blessed us. Now we actually have to do this.
We have to do this.
Oh
yes.
God. Oh God.
Of course, if you know our voices, you know us as the team behind the Strong Style Story podcast, because we just dropped an episode earlier this week. But actually, the genesis of the show actually was on that program, that very episode. Because, I mean, hell, why not? I mean, if we're pro wrestling only, this is like one of the major things going on in pro wrestling in 2019 was the return of a new pro wrestling promotion on TNT, the old home, of course, of, you know, WCW Monday Nitro.
Yep, and again, it's hard to believe that in the year 2019, we've kind of re-sparked. At this moment, I don't really want to say wars per se, because it's still, you know, a new company, an established company throwing their third branch show that used to be streaming only into cable TV kind of deal. It's hard to tell right now in terms of if you can really call this a war or not, but it makes for a really interesting time in terms of how you consume your wrestling, how you watch your wrestling. And we're here to talk about one of these two particular shows that are happening on Wednesday nights.
I'm not here to compare the two companies. We're simply only here to run down the actual episodes of this new program, AEW Dynamite. And I don't even think we're, you know, it may be a little beyond our remit to even talk about the pay-per-views, even though, you know, this is all lead up to, you know, the next AEW pay-per-view Full Gear on Saturday, November the 9th. So I don't know, that may even be outside of our remit, because really, I'm fine with just focusing on the TV, to be honest.
Yeah, and I mean, we can probably touch base, obviously, on the pay-per-views as the time comes. We still got a couple weeks to figure that one out, but until then, we'll just focus on the TV portion, and we definitely have a couple things that we can definitely cover on with this first edition of AEW Dynamite.
Yeah, so, you know, our opening bit should go a lot quicker in future episodes, but we're starting off with the pilot episode, AEW Dynamite, live from the Capital One Arena in Washington, the Capitol, as one of my old history teachers used to say, and announced attendance of 14,129. Not bad for a new promotion.
Yeah, very solid numbers. They got their numbers really quick, too, when the tickets did go on sale as well. So the interest is definitely there.
Your commentary team for this, Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur. Take away one of them, and yeah, this is definitely a WCW reunion.
Yeah, definitely so. And to me, the really interesting bit, and it's something we'll cover on as we go through the matches, it seems like Tony Schiavone was kind of that missing link to kind of seemingly energize JR a good bit compared to previous AEW pay-per-views, because
yeah, or even, you know, his infamous run on NGPW on Access too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is the most re-energized I think most of us have seen Jim Ross in years at this point.
He seems interested, for one thing, which is a weird concept if you remember his NJPW on Access run, that he seems actually interested in the product.
Mm-hmm.
But, ahead.
I just wanted to say really quickly, I couldn't be happier for Excalibur, just from my own personal years of seeing him in PWG enough times. It's such a treat to see him on live TV and being able to do commentary as well. So having a blast so far watching it.
So we had the introduction, and the theme music for the show I'm not fond of. It just sounds like generic pro wrestling TV show intro music to me, and it's just like, eh, whatever. And the music is going to come up a couple of times through this program.
As oh, well. Good. So we're both on that. We're both on that same vibe. Then this is going to work out just fine.
Oh yeah.
In terms of music direction.
Cool. Oh yeah. Yeah. Spoilers. Most of the music is trash on this show. It has to be said. I was going into this show after seeing, you know, because they released the intro on the internet. You know, a day or two ago, and I saw it. You know, the opening titles, and I was so ready to take the absolute piss out of the color run aesthetic, you know, with the powder, the color powder exploding, you know, at one of these, you know, these $40, you know, 10Ks that are out there. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I get what you mean by that. It caught us by surprise, I think, how well this integrated into the overall
it actually aesthetics. Did because if you see, like, you know, up on the the digital advertising hoarding up on, you know, where the upper levels are, and they made that also like a rainbow theme, you know, multicolor color shifting thing, and actually you know what, I kind of like it actually in retrospect. So
yeah.
Like I said, I was fully ready to make fun of the color run powder scheme, but no, it worked actually.
Yeah, I think they did a really good job of integrating not only that particular theme that they chose to go with, but the aesthetics of how they worked out the stage. Obviously, the TNA Impact in the good old fashioned Impact Zone days is still reflecting in full with the two separate entrance ways. There's no way, sadly, I'm going to be able to like not make that comparison every time. But
well, you know, New Japan has done that too on like house shows. So you know, and you know, when you see them in New Japan, like, you know, the one side will enter from one half of Cork, and the other side will enter from the other half. So, I mean, it's not uncommon.
Yeah, it's not an uncommon concept. I just think from a North American perspective, that's what I go to as my first comparison. But it's not bad by any means, and I really like what they did with the stage as well. It's simplistic, and it gets the point across. Nothing too overwhelming. No slip-and-slide waterfall-looking Titantrons out there.
Or the skate ramp. The half pipe that's on there. Now.
Yep.
Yeah, is Tony Hawk coming? well, let's move right along because this program actually moved right along into the first match, the first ever TV match for AEW, and it is Executive Vice President Cody Rhodes against Sammy Guevara, two irritating shits of wrestlers, quite frankly.
Yep. Little shits all around.
You're a free Aubrey Edwards. And she was good. She's like probably the best referee in the company.
Yeah, definitely. So Aubrey's great. And a good call on having her be part of that historic opening match as well, too. Just getting that across right off the bat.
So, Chris, what did you think of the match?
It started off a little bit slow, but I get what they were trying to do in terms of trying to establish Sammy as an actual threat to Cody's untarnished record for the most part, if you don't count his draw against Darby Allin and Fyter Fest. But I think they picked up speed as the match went along. Personally, not the biggest fan of Cody Rhodes. I think we've made that loud and clear throughout many strong style stories of history past, but I think they did what they needed to do. They got a hot crowd to go along with them for the ride, and I really actually liked the finish as well, with taking advantage of Guevara shooting star press finisher basically being countered with the knees, and Cody just being the wily veteran rolling him up.
Yeah, I made a few notes on this match. First of all, Cody Rhodes did a really awful springboard diamond cutter off the ropes. It did not connect anywhere near as well as I think they imagined in their head. I also really questioned both having, you know, a figure four spot in the very first TV match of this company because they're like really trying to throw it back, and I just really questioned it. And then I also really questioned the Brandy bump spot. Because come on, man! In 2019, we're gonna do the valet slash female manager slash spouse getting a bump.
The biggest thing, though, that I will say is different compared to many previous examples is that we know Brandy is a wrestler, and it did play into the match, thankfully. Which I'll give him credit for. It played into the match, but a couple of beats later, where she smacked the shit out of him in return for it. So,
that is true. But still, I mean, it's not really good optics, though, for a debut TV show in the first match, and we have a woman getting bumped.
Yeah, I can see how it would throw certain people off. Absolutely.
What I will praise was two of the big top rope moves. First, that reverse power slam by Cody off the top rope. That was pretty neat. And also, Sammy Guevara did a decent top rope Spanish fly, too.
Yeah, I was expecting him to botch it like Sammy Guevara usually tends to do with certain things. So, pleasant surprise right there that he actually nailed that. Good on him.
Yeah, he did it. But yes, ultimately, Cody Rhodes, your winner. Executive Vice President Cody Rhodes, your winner. With an inside cradle. Afterwards, we try to get Tony Schiavone to do his first in-ring interview on TNT in 19 years. Of course, Sammy Guevara shows up, gives a handshake, and then a run-in from the AEW champion with the belt that he recovered from the steakhouse, Chris Jericho.
Le Champion.
Le Champion, yeah. It was a run-in. It was a Jericho run-in. You know, there was co-breakers, there was a belt shot. He even stole a fan's camera to take pics, which I thought was funny.
That was fantastic.
But, you know, it was just, you know, it was a pro wrestling run-in. You know, the Hill champion trying to take out the ostensible babyface challenger.
Which, I get it's the dynamics, because at this point they've got another pay-per-view to build and they actually have TV to finally do it. So
might as well get
on that boat, even if it does overrun its welcome by an extra, like, 2 to 3 minutes. But hey, it is what it is.
Well, 2 or 3 minutes is going to be kind. I actually thought the match went longer than it should have. I thought the whole bit went longer than it should have. But, you know, it's establishing the main event program for Full Gear. So, I mean, we definitely know what the main event, the main event program of that pay-per-view is going to be. So, the second match is a match, the build-up based on D&D with Brandon Cutler versus Maxwell Jacob Friedman, the man whose gimmick is his scarf.
I was about to say that, so you beat me to the punch on that. Nicely done.
Well, that's because my honey's the one who came up with that one.
B is fantastic for doing that. And I mean, at this point, MJF is basically your run-of-the-mill, you know, New Englander, stereotypical rich guy. So you'll get good promos out of him every so often due to that. But otherwise, it's just basically establishing him as this guy that is going to be on TV fairly often, who's going to be your jerk-ass heel that you're going to want to pay money to see beat, ideally.
Right. He's also really good friends with Executive Vice President Cody Rhodes.
Yes, best friends, or so he says, but that's neither here nor there for the time being. As for the match, it was quick. It got the point across that Brandon Cutler is going to be sort of your, you know, fighting hardworking babyface, but that
with some nerdy tendencies, because what you have to add in these days is he's got some nerdy tendencies, so, you know.
Which hey, it's going to draw a certain type of audience to maybe check them out, which, you know, you might as well try to get every corner that you can possibly get, especially for a new TV show. But anyone who thought that this would go Brandon Cutler's way, just, well, I don't know what to tell you. but
well, it did its job. It was a quick TV match. I mean, that's what you were looking for was out of this one. I mean, we didn't need a 20-minute epic with this one. It was just a quick TV match. You know, they established, you know, the baby face. He loves, you know, he was a hard worker. He left the business to raise a family and presumably play a bunch of D&D and maybe I don't know, he doesn't see, unless he's playing a Nosferatu, he doesn't really seem the Vampire the Masquerade type to me. But
yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, unless he's you know, playing a Nosferatu, possibly a Toreador, who knows.
And now that we've gotten all the nerd references out of the way, thank you for joining us at Dungeons and Dragons Cast.
So we go to a commercial break. The first of the Cracker Barrel commercial breaks. We come back and we get a lead into hyping up the tag team tournament that's going to be starting next week on this program with special guests Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes.
That was really cool, actually, that they got the two of them to do that spot, and obviously bit of promotion for their movie as well with Jane, Silent Bob's reboot and Chris Jericho on that as well, which is nice. So,
but you know, we also got cameo appearances from Jack Evans and Helico in Private Party.
Yep. So again, it is, as you mentioned, nice quick segments that are establishing these beats that we should be looking forward to in a couple weeks. Oh, and I thought it was
But wait, there's more, because it went right into a SoCal Uncensored promo with Scorpio Sky trying to do his best Barack Obama impersonation as Daniels and Kazarian act as Secret Service agents.
Secret Service. I actually love that bit, to be honest. I thought Scorpio did a good job with it.
But then it got better, because we got one of the biggest pops of the night afterwards, because we had a nice cameo appearance from I guess we can call him this again, Pentagon Jr. And Rey Fénix.
Yes, sir. Hyping up the tag tournament. Again, the biggest thing with SoCal Uncensored, for those who aren't familiar, it's a three-man unit between Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, Scorpio Sky. And after the Obama DC segment bit, they did go into the ramp talking to the three of them, in which Scorpio basically said it'll be Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian representing SCU, because they are former four-time tag team champions.
Right,
so
it's the Addiction, basically.
Yep, it is the Addiction. So we'll
get to see some celebrity rehabs.
Yep, and then, of course, as you mentioned, we get to see the Lucha Bros showing up, Pentagon doing Cero Miedo, as the crowd immediately went along with it, which should show you how big of a deal these guys are going to be.
Well, yeah, I have said numerous times in very many forums that Pentagon is one of my top three wrestlers right now.
Yeah, definitely. He is. And there's something else about watching him in person, just like on TV. Like, it's just that intensity.
I won't go over the story when I was drunk. Yeah, I won't go over the story when I was drunk around him again.
Yeah, let's not.
I mean, it's nothing too embarrassing. And I got the shirt off of his back, so, you know.
Yeah,
it was cool.
There will be time. So, I mean, good stuff all around between them. Again, setting up the tension between these different teams, even if they're not necessarily matching up against each other right off the bat, it's huge, just to make sure that you know how serious this is and how much all of these guys in the division are chasing, those tag team titles and the tournament that's to come. So,
and they keep hyping up that they actually do care about tag team wrestling. So, I mean, it will be a refreshing change. I mean, we talk all the time on our other show how the tag division there is just absolute trash, and it just seems to be that way all over pro wrestling. So, let's see what happens. The third match, Chris, I know you were probably really into this one. Adam Page against Pac, the match that should have happened at Double or Nothing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And again, whatever complications went down that kind of prevented that Double or Nothing match, the way I see it, you know, things have kind of gotten through at this point. I think commentary did a really good job in this one, in particularly with bringing out the strengths of both guys. Hangman with coming very close to winning the AEW World title to begin with at All Out, and with Pac basically hyping him up as this guy who is maybe undersized according to some people, and who is incredibly skilled, but who has been overlooked, even though he was undefeated for a good 2 years straight, basically.
Right. And recently Open the Dream Gate champion back in his one of his old home promotions, the Dragon Gate.
Yes. And between the two of them, for the amount of time that they got on TV, I thought they worked a really solid match between each other. I loved Pac basically playing to the crowd like an absolute master when needing it to. Paige showing a bit of fire there altogether, and I even liked how they played in the finish with Hebner getting his view, you know, basically reduced as the two men were about to collide into them, and Pac being the wily veteran taking advantage of that. Mule kick right to the nuts, and then right into the now even more aptly called finisher with the Black Arrow, the corkscrew shooting star, and then into that brutalizer, the crucifix.
Yeah.
You know, rings of Saturn finisher, which I love the combination of those two, basically being your death kill
weapon. It's a very nice combination. I will grant that. This was pretty good. I actually, I don't really do star ratings, but two matches on this show get star ratings. I actually went 3.25 on this.
That's fair. Yeah, definitely. I don't really dabble into the stars portions myself, but a very enjoyable match to kind of wrap us out of that first hour and into the second hour of the programming.
Yeah, and it gave us a nice little bit of momentum going into it. I did really enjoy that match. Pac was great as a bastard heel. You know, he cheated to win, but you know, really we all know he didn't need to, but he's going to take any advantage he can when he can.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing that I love about his character, is that you know how good he is and that he can do this without all of the funky bullshit, but he still does it nonetheless just because he feels like being a dick.
Let's go into the fourth match. We have a title match on our debut show.
Mm-hmm.
It was the crowning the first ever All Elite Wrestling women's champion. And as we go in... with Dr. Britt Baker on commentary,
mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh's own, the challengers were Nyla Rose, someone who's controversial among scumbags, so I'm not going to dignify them with a response.
Yeah,
and Riho, the Joshi protege of one Kenneth Omega.
Yep, and coming into this one, Nyla Rose did win at All Out, the first women's casino battle royale, to earn her spot into this match. Britt Baker was one of the final three within it, I believe, but Bea Priestley kind of fucked her over off of that, so she's basically sort of still eyeing the title picture nonetheless. Right. And then with Riho, she kind of went on the winning streak ever since coming into the company at Double or Nothing with the six-woman Joshi tag that happened there, picking up a win over Nyla and Yuka Sakazaki at Fyter Fest, and then beating Hikaru Shida at
All Out.
Excuse me, All Out, and I believe she was part of the women's tag as well, too, at Fight for the Fallen, and was on the victorious end of that. So Riho kind of built a nice little streak
going into
this that earned her this spot into the title match. And we saw a bit of a preview on what these two could do to each other at Fyter Fest, but my goodness, they came off the gate, and they just... I think the crowd super helped that as well, but, I mean, they went to war here. I loved it.
I'm just going to point out that as much as we were trashing the music earlier, I absolutely love Riho's theme.
Yeah, they
Riho's
did a really good job.
Riho's theme is the best theme in the company.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll say this, out of the newer music direction themes that they have, without counting the Bucks, Jericho, Hangman, and Cody, who have had their own stuff there for a good time, Riho's was probably the standout of the night in terms of themes. Like, they did a really good job with that.
Yeah, that one is a banger. I really do enjoy that one. Overall, again, I don't really do star ratings, but I'm actually going to go 4 stars on this. This was the best match of the night by far.
Yeah, from Twitter discourse, that seems to be what about everybody's settling on, and either 3 or 3/4 or 4 flat. But, I mean, they did really good job playing into the strengths and weaknesses of both women. I do love the fact that even at certain points where particular spot when Riho tried a back body drop Nyla, but they seemed to botch it. I actually liked how they got out of that into continuing the match, and it almost felt like, again, botches and stuff like that. Sometimes they don't look very flattering, but at times I think it lends to kind of the credibility of a match, in which it kind of gives that feeling like, wow, these two are really going at each other here. And
well,
especially with this match, I felt
it wasn't the only botch, because Nyla couldn't get her up for a powerbomb.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure that out. But then later, she tried it with, I think it was Nakazawa, and she couldn't get him up.
And I mean, we can talk about that here, but I did wanted to go the results again. Riho does manage to pull out the plucky underdog win, and she is
with
her first
with a nice
ever.
With a nice looking Meteora too.
Yeah,
and they tease it at first too, because she first went for a Shining Wizard / Akiyama knee strike. Nyla dodges it, but then she comes back, does Meteora in the double knees in the back, and then comes back and does a Meteora, and picks up the win. Then we get into the post match. It was a great moment. And then we get into the post-match, and it nearly completely ruins it, because Michael Nakazawa wanted to do, his bullshit shtick that wasn't funny at the CEO X New Japan show back in July of or June of 2018. And then we get a needless heel turn from Nyla Rose.
And I think the part of it is, I get, even coming into this match, Nyla did have the more heelish tendencies on it, but I do feel that they could have used this just as a moment to really let Riho kind of have her shine, leave it be. But I do think that it led into an interesting ending with Kenny Omega, of all people, being the one to come in and stop the attack portion.
I just thought that the whole shtick it really took the shine off the actual match. I mean, not enough that I'm going to take stars off of it, because it's a post-match angle, but at the same time, I mean, you had Britt Baker right there, and she really wasn't doing much on commentary. I really hope she doesn't do commentary again, because that was not good. As smart as she is, to get through dental school, and as good of a wrestler she is, she was not good doing commentary. But Britt Baker's right there, and she kept talking about how she's going to, put her foot down and make herself known to the winner of the match, and then she doesn't. And then we get Nyla doing a needless heel turn, and we have to have Kenny Omega make the save. Yeah, that whole post-match angle was garbage.
Yeah, it was a weird beat to follow what was an amazing match. And if anything that I guess we could say feedback-wise is just less of that, like especially when you have the elements on hand for Baker herself possibly making the stop and kind of setting her and Nyla up to a certain extent, while, there's certain things that you could have done with it that I feel would have been better. But given what it's done, a few missed notes there. Just let Riho celebrate accordingly and stuff instead of trying to.
This isn't the first time that Kenny Omega's ruined somebody's title win, because remember, back at New Japan, back in February of 2018, and Jay White had just won his first ever title.
Oh, and, yep, yep.
And Kenny Omega had, and it took a backseat to, the Golden Lovers reunion.
That is true.
Somehow that's had Kenny Omega's paw prints all over it.
It's just one of those things where it was a case of overbooking that could have not been overbooked, but I mean, that's that. It's done at this point. Riho is your first ever AEW Women's Champion.
Congratulations to her.
Congratulations to her.
I would have been just fine with Nyla too, just for the record.
Either woman would have been incredibly deserving of that honor to begin with, but I do like the idea of Nyla sort of being this looming threat to the title whenever she damn well pleases, rather than kind of shoehorning her in a way that, you know, kind of having the, you know, heel dominant champion to begin with run to the point in which people might get like sick and tired of it, I guess, which I guess it depends on however your mileage may vary in terms of how you see how certain champions and their alignments should be booked, I guess is the best way of putting it. But no, either woman would have been super deserving of it. I'm really interested to see kind of where they go with Riho in this case, because they definitely have certain challenges that they could do. Obviously, there's Britt Baker in the background. There's Bea Priestley that's there as well, who's probably going to have to deal with Baker first probably to get to that. But then you have some other names, like obviously Hikaru Shida is another one. So this women's picture from here on is what I'm interested in seeing what they'll do to follow this up. So
I'm just going to say I just want to see one woman come in, wrestle Riho, and I think you know who that is. That will be Erica herself, Aja Kong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be phenomenal.
I would be so there for that. So we have our final match, the main event of the night. The advertised match was, you know, Executive Vice Presidents Kenny Omega, Matt Jackson, Nick Jackson against AEW Champion Chris Jericho and the former EYFBO, the former LAX, Santana and Ortiz in a six-man tag match that ended up not being a six-man tag match. Because, and admittedly, this turned out to be the best part of that whole affair. But, of course, we have the return to the ring of one Mr. Jonathan Moxley, the international purveyor of violence.
Let's just talk about how fucking brilliant that camera work was, going from Kenny's Terminator pose into Moxley literally getting into the, slittering into the ring, basically, and just that entire, like, picture frame of just like, oh, you done fucked up now was so well done.
And
oh my God.
We've been missing him since G1 Climax, and it was great to see him again. Moxley right now can do no wrong for me.
And again, to me, from a character perspective, this is the proper response from a Jon Moxley after Kenny Omega basically mocked his staph infection to begin with in camera and such, just going out there and beating the fuck out of him regardless of whether he was in the main event match or not. And those boys definitely did brawl all over the arena, leading into a very sick looking Death Rider, Paradise Shift. Yeah, Paradigm Shift, as I think they call it in AEW portion, into a glass table. But yeah,
we'll call it Death Rider.
That's fine with me.
So do you think that Moxley has a different character or approach in AEW than he does in New Japan?
I think with New Japan, at the very least, he's a little bit more kind of respectful of the whole fighting spirit portion of things, and that's what he wants to do. He just wants to fight people, while in AEW, he just kind of wants to fuck everybody up no matter what happens.
I think there's more of a, there's more humor to him in New Japan.
Yeah, it's a little bit more kind of your, he can still be fairly lighthearted accordingly, while with AEW, it's definitely more of a, okay, this is my business phase kind of thing.
I mean, it's still fine. I mean, it's the same guy, but I mean, you could just see that it's like, and you can see that in Chris Jericho too. There's a slight difference in Chris Jericho in AEW versus Chris Jericho in New Japan right now.
Yeah, and I really like that because it still keeps the characters familiar to whichever audiences you're trying to appeal to, but there's these subtle nuances that defer them from being the exact same copy pasta version of themselves into three or four different companies. And there's some wrestlers that unfortunately never quite, if they work multiple promotions, they never quite go for that. And the end result is pretty much like, wow, I've seen this in three different places. Okay, then, cool.
Right, but I mean, at the same time, you know, Jericho still had, you know, he has Painmaker, you know, in his entrance video for AEW, which, you know, we all know what that's referencing.
Yes, definitely.
So, like I said, but I mean, it's just interesting that AEW has, you know, two guys who are also, you know, working high-profile matches in New Japan. I mean, Moxley's going to be back in New Japan on the 14th at, you know, taking on, you know, fighting Juice Robinson. And it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, if he's still going to be in AEW mode mentally, or if we're going to get, you know, the guy that we had during G1.
Yeah, it does make you wonder, and I think we'll get a lot of those answers in the oncoming weeks through vignettes, brawls, whatever it is, and then with Full Gear between him and Kenny Omega, that match that was supposed to happen at All Out. So
now I will say this: that the Kenny doing the cleaner tribute spot, that was kind of cute.
That was actually pretty funny. I very much enjoyed it.
That was cute, but otherwise, I mean, this was kind of a waste of a match. Otherwise, it turned into a handicap match, and of course, you know, the Matt Jackson, you know, took a code breaker for the loss from the reigning AEW champion. And then we got run-ins upon run-ins, including an appearance from you had to tell me who this was, because I, of course, don't watch WWE and had no idea.
Yeah, definitely. So just to break this down initially, the 2-on-3, the Young Bucks definitely put a little bit of a fight. There's some fun little spots in that main event, even with the handicap situation. But at the end, springboard from one of the Young Bucks when they were trying to do the Meltzer driver gets countered into a code breaker. The artists formerly known as LAX and Jericho take advantage of it. Judas Effect, pinfall. Victory, and then the post-match attack involves things like Cody Rhodes coming in to try and basically turn this into an even situation. Another executive vice president making his presence known. Then eventually Sammy Guevara comes out of nowhere, almost seemingly like he's going to help Cody in the lot. Blow blows Cody accordingly, because Sammy Guevara is a prick. He's always been a prick. He will continue to be a prick, which is fine.
Yeah, he betrays everybody. I mean, we saw him immediately betray Shigehiro Irie right after he just won the KOD title, and then he immediately cashes in his Anytime Anywhere challenge and failed.
Yep. I do recall that. That is exactly the kind of person that Sammy Guevara is. So, interestingly enough, which, again, it makes sense given that they are brothers after all. Dustin Rhodes comes in trying to make the save this time around. But then the surprising bit of all, and this definitely does have Jim Ross's paw prints all over it, Jake Hager, a.k.a. Jack Swagger, suddenly pops up and he just destroys everything in his sight. I mean, they definitely made him look like an absolute monster. And, of course, it kind of helps when you're, like, 6'5" and built like a fucking brick house. So,
but again, you had to tell me who that was, because again, I don't watch WWE, and I never would have guessed that that's who that was.
This is why you got me around, Jeff. I am your inside source for all things in Vince's dumb empire and his house of formerly broken toys who show up in AEW, I guess. But it is an intriguing note, because at the end, shout out to Dustin Rhodes for taking a nasty looking gut wrench powerbomb on the table that did not give at all.
Yeah,
so
that table spot did not work nearly as well as I thought they think it was going to.
I am the table in AEW. It only took a show and we already get one of those spots. Perfection. But I do think it's intriguing that in a way, with Cody obviously having his three other executive vice presidents and the whole Elite banner behind them, Handmade Page should be noted as being part of that, even though he's not an executive vice president yet. But Jericho somewhat building his own little unit of sorts here with Santana, Ortiz, Guevara, and Hager is interesting. I'll give him that. Whether something comes out of it specifically, or whether they're just hired muscle for Jericho until he deals with Cody, I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. But that's your pilot episode of AEW Dynamite, everybody.
All right, Chris, pros and cons.
Pros, I'm going to say the aesthetics of the arena worked much better than expected. Matches were, for the most part, at a very good pace, depending on people's spots. On the card, I think the opener is the only one that we both agree that could have gone a couple less minutes, but it wasn't like extremely egregious. Women's title match, best thing in the entire show. I do think that it should have main evented, given how much of the historic side of the fence was made there. But then again, considering the after angle of that, maybe probably the best idea to keep it at fourth. Cons, I will say, even though it was a pilot show, I do feel that it did get overbooked in certain spots, but run-ins, I get that you're trying to establish certain allegiances here and there, but wasn't really the biggest fan once it happened for like the fifth time over the course of the main event. It definitely had the WCW feel to it, and the latter portion of WCW feel, which is never something you want to bring up at any point. I guess another pro to bring up really quick was the quick little segments hyping up the tag tournament coming up starting next week. That should be noted as well. Music is a con outside of Rio's theme. Whoever is their music technician, please get your shit together. Please.
I'm going to go with, first of all, once again, the women's match, the match itself was fantastic, even though there were a couple of botched spots. But again, that's something you could be forgiven because they actually made it work, and you could kayfabe that, and it worked. And you know what? I've seen some absolute classic matches that have had botches in them. You know, and you know, it really just all depends on how well you work past them sometimes. The other thing, I'm going to say the cons. Yeah. Like I said, at the beginning of the show, I was so ready to make fun of the color run aesthetic, but no, it actually ended up really working. And, I really hope that's what they're going to go with, going forward. Other pros, Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur, you wouldn't think that they would actually work well together, especially in this day and age with Jim Ross. Actually, the announcing did not get on my tits, and it was pretty good, actually, in spots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kudos to them on that. I do think that Tony being brought in was probably the best move that they could have made to really balance things out as a way of keeping JR excited, still having kind of that wrestling acumen and connection to what used to be on TNT all those years ago, and he blends still pretty well with the modern product side of the fence, which meshes well with what Excalibur brings to the table. So really good combination between the three. I'm a fan.
The cons are I really think they were leaning way too much into trying to bring back that WCW Monday Nitro feel, up to and including, you know, main event fuck finishes, and not getting the advertised main event. I think that may hurt in the long run. I also did not like the fact that it was a 2-hour program and we only had 5 matches. I thought that, you know, if you want to go out with a bang, I think that if they would have cut the opening match a little bit, maybe 3 matches in an hour, I think that's good. But only 5. It means you're running too many angles and too many promos in one TV episode.
Mm-hmm. And I do think it's one of those situations where, given that their presences on social media are as big as they are, I do think that they're going to get a lot of these comments throughout there. Some way less flattering than what we're saying here. Some maybe a little bit more. Well, but I do think
I can be as honest as I want, because Nick Jackson blocked me anyway, so.
Oh, yeah, right. I do remember that. I do think that with time, if they are really listening and trying to improve with each and every single week, we see, hopefully, less of these sorts of situations, but time will tell. Until then, kind of excited to see where next week goes, because at this point, you've got the pilot out of the way. You have a lot of your main programs established and certain story beats that have been hit. But then now this whole tag team tournament thing, that's going to be, I think, the big story for the next few weeks here as the tournament happens. And I want to see how well they do this, if it's going to actually do tag team wrestling the amount of justice that we feel so many companies don't give it. So it does help that their two of their executive vice presidents are obviously one of the arguably most popular tag teams in this particular portion of the past decade, for sure. I think we can say that at this point.
But, well, yeah, and they also have one of the other, you know, again, you have one of the most popular, other most popular tag teams in the world, and, which contains, you know, one of my top three pro wrestlers in the entire world, too. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the teams in the tournament definitely have some nice combinations with a little bit of everything here. So I'm really stoked to see where they go with this and to see kind of how they built the road of crowning the first tag team champions, whether that's at Full Gear or at a Dynamite episode down the road. I guess we'll wait to see what happens.
Overall, I really think, I mean, it was a good 2 hours of TV, of wrestling on TV. There's some room for improvement. The music is trash for the most part. I like the aesthetics. Do more matches. You don't need to have 20-minute epics, and, you know, especially, you know, for your first match on TV. And I guess, you know, the match itself wasn't 20 minutes, but the whole segment, you know, that was a good chunk of change there. And it, I mean, it does establish your main event program, but, you know, it didn't need to go on that long either, I don't think. Especially for your first episode, I think. Now, you know, the advertisement said that the show starts at 7:30 Eastern time, which means I'm sure that they had dark matches. So
they did. It was, I believe it was Darby Allin against Shima, which I'm pissed we didn't get that on TV after hearing about it.
Why couldn't we have that on TV?
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord, that would have been a fantastic match to show. Well, maybe it'll show up on the Elite's YouTube channel or something.
I wouldn't be surprised actually if they start doing that, having some of these dark matches go online on the YouTube channel. I think it'd be a good way of promoting the product beyond the obvious means. So, yeah, hopefully we get footage of that.
Man, I would have loved to have seen that match.
Same. Mm-hmm.
So Chris, are we gonna come back next week?
I guess we committed to this, so we might as well.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to us ramble on this on the pilot episode for the pilot episode of Boom Goes the Dynamite about the pilot episode of AEW Dynamite. So, Chris, give me your plugs.
Oh, yes. Simple enough. You can find me on Twitter at Brazilian Fury. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. You'll see in that case all of my graphs talk, all of random talk, video games, cosplay stuff as well. I've got my Halloween costume idea for this year all wrapped up, so super excited to finally be able to do Yakuza Zero's version of Goro Majima. So
You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. My personal account is at GD Wessel. That's 2 S's 1 L. Chris and I also do the Strong Style Story podcast here on the Pro Wrestling Only podcast network. Shout out to Dave Ryan and Steger Lee Malone. Shout out to Kelly, Johnny, and Pete. Shout out to Tom Batista. Shout out to Peter Winson.
Yeah, our Pro Wrestling Only family is a good one for sure. They've put up with our bullshit for this long. I'm glad they're letting us do an extra one of these at this point.
We'll see what John has to say after we post this.
True. Although, one big thing as well, too, you will be doing some pretty fun stuff coming up over the next week or two, right, with New York?
Up. In fact, I have a plane to catch in the morning, so that's why we're going to wrap the show up now. So we should be back for episode 2 of AEW Dynamite next week, where the tag team tournament starts.
Indeed. And until then, guys, thanks so much for sticking with us through this pilot episode. And just remember, boom goes the dynamite.
Have a good week.